Okay, welcome to the Racing Edge podcast. This is our first podcast with myself, Nick Rowland, and my co-host, Mr. Brandon Warren. Good evening, Brandon.
Good evening, Nick. Good to be here.
It is indeed. This is our first podcast we've ever tried, actually, between us. It's been in the making for quite a while, but we've eventually made it, and Brandon will take you through our ideas, essentially.
Oh, all laziness aside, yeah, it has taken us a while to get this here, but many people are asking us, why should we listen to you, not the other F1 podcast? Well, I would say you could listen to those, but what makes us unique is that we're pretty much we try to be a politically incorrect podcast. We try to generate discussions around certain topics, around table discussions, the stuff that really gets people interested. Instead of going over the news or just going over things, you actually get people involved in opinionated arguments. Clean arguments, but arguments nevertheless, and on what, you know, from a basically a fan's perspective and putting it through a context of a fan. So because of this focus on fans, we try to involve our listeners as well, and that's the special thing about this podcast, that in all things motorsport that we talk about, in each new podcast that we have, we're going to invite a new guest, and this guest can email us. You guys, we will provide the email and the contact details. And you yourself, the listener, can be on the next show, and in some cases can be on return shows as well. And it's something we're very excited about, and we think we can get everybody to have some very meaningful discussions, and who knows where we can go from there, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. Who knows where we can go? But it's very true. And what Brandon was saying is the fact we want to create the interaction with the listeners. And you know, if you want to ask questions or got any ideas or comments, or if you are interested in being on the show, then this is essentially what we want to do. For all the UK listeners, think of it as a little bit like what TalkSport is on the radio. It's the same sort of principle where people ring in and they have discussions. Just tonight, I heard the one about Rio Ferdinand, but nevertheless, it's the same principle. You can get involved as much as you want, whether it be comments or actually joining us actually on the show. So with that said, our first one...
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Rowland. For all you UK listeners, but for all of you US listeners, thinking of more of like ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, where you have four different people talking and then they declare a winner at the end. But I just want to get this across. We are looking to get fans from all, we want to have fans engaging each other. Whether it be a fans from like the southern U.S. talking about NASCAR, to the guy who lives in the Netherlands wanting to talk about sports cars. We want to try to get an international focus. What other podcasts seem to fail to do is to get that international focus and get them speaking to one another. I think it would be a sort of a very interesting paradigm to start from. And sorry for that interruption. So.
No, it's a good point, because we do have listeners, hopefully, from both sides of the pond and around the world, to be honest with you. So we have various interests that we'll stem across, obviously, like you said, with NASCAR, going to IndyCar, Formula One, to sports cars. But our show, particularly for today, we're going to focus on what we've just seen this past weekend with Formula One. We all know that Sebring was on as well, but this particular podcast, I think we've decided we're going to settle on the Formula One side. And we've just had the race in Albert Park. Melbourne, Australia, which was, well, a lot of people have viewed it in a negative way and some in a positive way. And it seems to me it's been more so the diehard fan and the core enthusiast that has enjoyed it, and the casual viewers not so much. Now, I don't know if that was down to the tyres or the nature of how the race panned out with the weather also, but for me, Brandon, I actually rather enjoyed it, to be honest with you.
No, absolutely. I guess you might be right a little bit about the diehard fans versus the casual fans, but I had there's a lot going into this season. We know we have a big change in technical regulations next year. There were some exciting driver lineups going into this race and a lot of unknowns, but yeah, it was, you know, there's a lot of questions going into the race, and I think when we watched it, it was very exciting. It might have not been as exciting as the, you know, sort of synthetic overtakes, but I think you were mentioning to me the other day, it was a lot like in the early 2000s, or F1, you know, probably 10 years ago, and up until recently with all these rule changes, that, you know, you had that sort of exciting action going on where you have cars, you know, laying down their blistering times before they hit into the pits and try to overtake each other through the pits in that way, which, you know, can be boring to some, but I think it was exciting, and I think the podium was a great great example. It finally showed, I think, in a real way, who the top drivers really are. And that's my opinion. I mean, to have Fernando Alonso, Kimi Raikkonen, and Sebastian Vettel up there, and yes, I'll say it for once, Sebastian Vettel deserves to be up there. I think that's just a good indicator as to what type of season we're going to have this year. So I'm very excited.
I think you're absolutely right. That has to be one of the most special and one of the greatest podiums, I would have said, actually, for those three in particular drivers. And like you said, with the way the season, the preseason has gone with various teams and drivers and how they've approached it, obviously with very little technical regulation change going into this season, is that, I mean, the Sky Sports lot, for example, they called it basically 2012 Part 2, which I guess there's an element of it being correct there, with Vettel being the champion already, and obviously we lose the V8s at the end of this season. So I think it's shaping up to be one of the most interesting seasons, especially now Pirelli have gone down a different route with their tyres. Now, the tyres were kind of, I think, actually a little bit underplayed throughout pre-season, because what people, I think, may have missed is that Pirelli have actually gone for a completely different construction within the compound itself. I think it was only the hard tyre that has stayed the same from last year. I think that one's still relatively the same, but the rest of the compounds, all throughout the compounds, that's including the wet tyres as well, have gone through a complete structure change as well. So I think that's one thing that the teams are having to get a handle on. And with the lower temperatures that we saw in Melbourne on Sunday compared to what we saw on Friday, it was pretty significant in the way that the temperature was affecting the cars. Now, last season in particular, we saw how good the Red Bull was in the cooler conditions. But this time round, and this may be because of the construction, it didn't appear as good. And the track, the way it is, being a street circuit, is very abrasive. And it just did not play to their strengths, what we had been accustomed to, especially for the past season.
Yeah, and I think, and what's a big problem over in the States here, I think in a lot of ways, and this is sort of like piggybacking on what you said earlier about casual and hardcore, it's interesting you say that, because I really do feel like with these tires, it's designed for, it's well geared towards the casual viewer. We want to see a bit more
action. It's entertainment.
That's what makes, at least in the States, unfortunately at times, that's what draws in the casual viewer. That's what makes them feel like they're involved, rather than being overwhelmed by technical details to where, you know, they don't feel like watching it. They don't feel like they can relate in any way. And I guess that's something to say about the States here, about how people watch things. But all jokes aside, I noticed the NBC, which we in the States, we just got a new NBC won the contract instead of Speed, so we actually got to step up in our quality of our broadcast. So they were explaining this a little bit better to people with tires and things like that. And I like it. I've always had like two different views on it, in ways that I like it, but I do kind of miss the days of having multiple tire manufacturers, and like the big differences either in tire temperatures or in things like that would happen between those wars of those manufacturers. And having one single manufacturer, yes, it makes things a little bit more even. We can answer a lot of questions now in a lot of ways. A lot of people would want to know, well, yeah, okay, Michelin or Bridgestone I started watching in 2006. People are always like, okay, well, what's the big difference between them? You know, we want these drivers, we're going to see, what if they're on the same tire? And so we have that now, but I think in a lot of ways it's detrimental. And I've kind of noticed it's, sort of the same thing. A lot of people don't understand what's going on with even the hardcore viewers don't even understand what's going on with the tires. And they get really mad that we have these soft tires that just, aren't realistic, but at the end of the day, it's tire management. This has been central to racing, automobile racing, for years upon years, and it's been a skill that everybody needs to have. And I think more now than any other time that we've seen, it's the ones who can't manage their tires well, it's now clearly evident.
Yeah, and I think what you alluded to there with the tire war, if you like, is that a lot of the entertainment or fans that want to view it for the purest entertainment is that there was an argument once where people said that if the tyres on the Ferrari, say in 2006 with Bridgestone, were planted onto the McLaren, you know, would we see different outcomes and maybe Schumacher not winning as many titles? But that, I don't believe in that completely, because each one of the cars is different in how they're built and developed.
Right.
You know, just because you're dropping some Bridgestones onto a McLaren doesn't mean that the McLaren's going to work in the same way what the Ferrari does. So the fact that you have a tyre war, I think, is good. And while we don't want to go too much into depth with sports cars do exactly that. You have a Porsche on Michelins and you could have a Ferrari on Bridgestones. It doesn't matter. You still, as we've seen many times in sports car racing, get in very close battles and right towards the end of the race as well, whether it be 2 3/4 hour, 2 hours, 45 minute race, or a 10-hour race. You know, you're still going to get it. And I think what we see now with Pirelli is they've gone down to this specific route where they're almost demanding to have 2 or 3 stop strategies throughout a race. And that's exactly what we saw. Obviously, touching now onto the point with Kimi Räikkönen winning, he was one of the only front runners that was able to 2-stop, whereas everyone else around him had to 3-stop. And while Fernando Alonso did the most spectacular job in trying to catch it back up and bring down the deficit between a 2-stop strategy and a 3-stop strategy, it still wasn't able to pay off. And Kimi Räikkönen obviously popped up right towards the end of the race. I think it was about 2 or 3 laps to go, and just popped in the fastest lap of the race. So it goes to show that the tyres on the Lotus, in particular, in the cooler conditions, seem to work quite well.
Yeah, Räikkönen, I always like what he says. He's just, you know, straight up. Of course, I think that's what everybody likes. Straight to the point. He's like, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, well, why'd you go so fast? Well, I had this thing called speed. I love that sort of straight answer. Not, you know, gimmicks, or not trying to involve people, or not, you know, let's talk about our sponsors or anything like that. But yeah, when it came down to the tires, and at the end he popped in that fastest lap. And I loved it when they asked him, and he said, you know, what were you doing there? It seems like you were pushing too hard, you know, pushing pretty hard. Were you worrying about Fernando coming up on you? And he actually said, no, that was, like, actually quite simple. I was just doing the same thing I was doing. I was very relaxed. And if he's not – I've never known Kimi Räikkönen to be that big of a liar when he's talking to the fans and stuff. He usually keeps it pretty real. Then I think the other teams have, you know, I think we should expect some of the same performances. Maybe even in hotter conditions come Malaysia, and that's what's going to make I think everybody knew that Lotus was going to be devastating, and who knows if they have the resources over time, if they've got everything together to sort of keep this up over a long campaign, because it's a long season ahead. But yeah, I found that to be very interesting, that he thought he was very relaxed doing his fastest laps around the end of the race, even though he had a hard charge of Fernando Alonso behind him. And maybe that's just, you know, a testament to the type of car design that they've done this year, that they've, you know, done everything right in that. And I've kind of found it surprising. Speaking of that, I guess we're going to, you know, focus in on these tires. Ferrari. I saw in the news just recently, was talking about how they still think that they need to go for all-out pace over tire management. I thought that was really interesting. They kind of worded it a bit strangely, but that's basically what they were saying, that they think that by focusing on pace, they'll somehow work out tire management. You know, and in my mind, I think that's silly. I mean, obviously, they can't be thinking that, but, what did you think about that? That was kind of a weird article to read.
It was a little bit strange, and to be quite honest with you, I'm not totally sure it's quite what they said or were looking to say, because obviously you want the raw pace of the car against a Red Bull, naturally, but also you want the time management to be able to last and create the strategies within the race. So I think what they were trying to allude to is the fact that they want to get more pace out of the car itself. And when they say they're not worried about tyre management, I think that's because potentially they're genuinely not worried about tyre management this season. Compared to last season's car, which was pretty horrific at the start of the season, you know, nearly over 2 seconds off in pre-season, compared to what they have now, it's a pretty huge difference in what they have. And I think they believe what they have as a base and what they can use with the tyres is solid. And what they're essentially going to look for now is what Fernando Alonso said from the very first step into the car in Barcelona, is that it just simply needs more downforce. And I think that's what Ferrari essentially have tried to allude to, but they've worded it in a way that sounds... I don't know if they were trying to throw the opposition even, but it's an odd one the way it's been worded. But I personally think they're just simply looking for the more downforce to create the overall speed.
Yeah. I can go with that. I think really what it is, they might not, they're probably not even worried anyways, because as we saw last year, most of the teams got their car, well, unless you're a Mercedes, got used to those tires, you know, by three or four races in. Over time, they had data, they had, you know, comparisons that they could make. They had actual empirical data to show, and they could make adjustments to that. And I think what they're, in a big way, they're saying that we have the design right. We're not going to be making liberal designs that are going to go this way or that way and maybe throw us off the mark a bit. This car is designed well. We can win it this year. The tires, we'll get around to the tires. But we're not going to do that by changing the entire car's design and compromising something that, you know, a good base that we've already started from. And I think maybe, you know, in that way, that's what they're looking at. And it's really funny to see this, you know. I got to ask, Nick, I mean, have you been dying to, when I saw the end of this race, have you been dying to see this Kimi and Alonso part two? You know, let's shut up all these Kimi Raikkonen fans again, or let's shut up all these Fernando Alonso fans. Finally get it down to the wire. Because I don't know how many times I've heard since 2005, oh, the McLaren was good, but, you know, it just wasn't built great at all. And that's the only reason why Kimi lost, because he would have won and he would have beat Fernando, and there had been no, you know, there had been no contest, and Fernando's nowhere near as good as Kimi. You know, I am no Fernando Alonso fan. I'm not sitting – I am a Fernando Alonso fan, but I wasn't preferring one over the other back then, or when I, you know, when I look back at it. But I am tired of hearing this argument. And so when I see – you know, some odd years later, now we're here at 2013, it's interesting to see that these guys are still at the top of their game. They're still the top drivers in a very competitive series. So I got to ask, I mean, are you excited to see this? And who do you think is going to come out on top?
I think you raise a good point, and it's something that Martin Brundle has often said, is that he regards, it's actually Lewis Hamilton regards the fastest driver, but Fernando Alonso is the best all-round driver. But I put Kimi Raikkonen into that category as well, and we haven't, obviously due to Red Bull's domination more than anything and the emergence of Sebastian Vettel, I don't think we've seen the true fight that we've all wanted between some of these top-line drivers that we know are more than capable of doing it, and we may finally see, obviously it's only race one, it might all change in Malaysia, but we may finally see the potential of a Fernando Alonso versus Kimi Raikkonen battle, with a bit of Sebastian Vettel thrown in on top and Lewis Hamilton when he gets his Mercedes up to speed as well, we could see it potentially one of the great, great fights in a championship. It has the potential for it in the way it's shaped up with after race one, but we all know it's not really until the sort of European season before you get the full swing of things. But the potential for it is probably there more so than it ever has been in the past 4 to 5 years. So I think that's probably the most encouraging thing, is that we may potentially finally see this titanic scrap between them, and Vettel, well, essentially showing his mettle against two of the greatest drivers probably of all time.
Yeah, and that's gotta, you know, stick a little bit of a craw in his asshole a bit, because, you know, here I am. I feel pretty bad, you know. Here I am. Oh, I won the championship. I am the 2012 champion. Yeah, it might have been a bit disputed between if you're a Red Bull fan or Ferrari fan or whatever, that, you know, all that stuff that went on last year in Brazil. But yet I'm not regarded as the best driver. I have won 3 championships to Fernando's 2, but yet I'm still not regarded. I wasn't regarded as driver of the year. Some people still doubt that I am the best driver. And, you know, which is obviously, you know, in every motorsport, if you're Valentino Rossi, if you're Sebastian Loeb, if you're anybody, they want to see that you can go to a different team and actually win it. And, you know, in some cases, some people do, or in some cases, they just stick to what they're doing. And I think, in a lot of ways, Vettel, you know, he wants to do that, but in a lot of ways, it's very frustrating because he's won so many, but he's also been in a dominant car. But, you know, a lot of people don't give him a lot of credit as he should have because he's had to, you know, it's hard. It's easy to get overshadowed by names like Kimi Raikkonen and Fernando Alonso. And, you know, I think the same thing goes for Hamilton as that he's had to face up against them, but I think if this is his chance, if this is his year. This could be Vettel's year if he wants it. This is going to be his chance to, you know, secure himself. Not because of a fourth championship. I don't think people really care about that kind of stuff until later, way after the point when they start naming off, oh, his fourth championship. But mainly because he was able to defeat both of these guys, and there might have not been too big of a difference between their cars. I think for him, it's going to say a lot. And
I think Vettel in particular last season probably put himself into that potential to have the crown of one of the greatest drivers. The two seasons prior, maybe not. So the certainly last season, the way he squared up to Alonso, and obviously not having the greatest car, Alonso also certainly showed he's a tough guy. He's not going to back down anytime soon, but I think he has the potential this season with a Ferrari that is closer to a Red Bull probably than ever before, and potentially also the Lotus, with the fact that you are going essentially saying, look, these cars are pretty similar, you go prove the rest. And I think that is a big challenge for Sebastian Vettel, but one that I think he is up for more than ever, to be regarded as one of the great drivers. And Fernando Alonso, probably more people than ever would have thought want Fernando Alonso to finally win another title. But something you just said there I agree with is the fact, you know, the great drivers move teams. And I think that's one of the key things. I mean, look at Schumacher, he moved team. Senna moved team. Alonso's moved team. Kimi Raikkonen's moved team. You know, all the great drivers, and you go back in history as well, the various drivers that moved team and became great. And I think that's what it requires is for some reason, you know, people always say, just, oh, you know, loyalty, etc. But when Vettel has a car in the way and the fashion that he has a car and is winning so profoundly and profusely even, you know, so easily in some respects, it starts to question, is it literally just the car? And I think this is what happened at the start of last year. We didn't see Vettel at his best with a car that clearly was not up to scratch. So I think that is where a potential question mark still lingers over his head. I don't think anyone can doubt his racecraft and his race ability. I'm not entirely sure why or where that came from originally, but I don't think that was ever really particularly
I think we know where that came from. Butthurt fans that were upset that their drivers were being dominated by this child.
Sure.
I mean, there is that. I got to throw that out there because I think that's what really comes into play. Or we haven't had a true test, and it wasn't until he passed, you know, Fernando Alonso around the outside on Monza, that spectacular pass he had on him. That, you know, even I, when I was watching that point, as much as I, you know, didn't want to support the guy, Vettel, I was just like, wow, you know, I can't deny that at that point. So, and I thought maybe I was one of those butthurt fans to see him, you know, taking out some of my drivers that I really like, you know. But I think, but you know, when you think about it, he has moved. He has moved. He was in BMW, right? Well, a race, and then he was in Toro Rosso.
Learning the ropes in some respect. I know what you're saying, but I think you have to be at the top of the sport, like Schumacher was with Benetton, and then moving to Ferrari. I think that's what Hamilton's essentially trying to do, although Hamilton obviously hasn't won the titles like Vettel has, and to be honest with you, McLaren should have won it last year. It just goes to show that, you know, Hamilton wants to move on and do something like that. But I mean, just to say, we know we are 24 minutes into this podcast, but we do have one actually main topic we wanted to focus on, and that was McLaren, or is McLaren, I should say. McLaren, they have started the season. They've had such a bizarre season already, you know, and it's been pre-season in one race. It's come out in the media just recently that the time that Jenson Button set in Jerez was not a true time because they had some suspension either missing or added on, I can't remember which way around it was, and essentially lowered the ride height, and it made the car look a lot better than it actually was. But you get to a track that's bumpy, such as Albert Park in Melbourne, it's not going to work. And now they are battling what I personally think is the same problem Ferrari had at the start of last season, trying to understand the pull rod suspension system. Ferrari were 2 seconds off, and it just so happens you come to a new season and another team's got the pull rod suspension, and boom, 2 seconds off also. So McLaren are definitely fighting something here to understand this suspension system, but also how to set it up, and then finally how to actually understand how to maximize it.
Right, sometimes you have to put in, like, sometimes you have to take a gamble. And it's kind of funny that they're doing such a thing going into, you know, a major technical regulations changes in 2014. But another way is I can understand. I mean, sometimes just necessarily some people are screaming. I cannot believe, especially looking at the UK press, just tearing McLaren a new asshole. Just like, oh, they're just being so downtrodden, you know, what a nightmare, blah, 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 blah. It's like, listen, you know, sometimes you take these chances. You have to. You can't keep doing the same thing. You're going to be overtaken. And, you know, I think I can respect them in a way that they've been taking taking wild chances. No, maybe not stupid chances. They're not stupid at all. It's if we can – yeah, maybe we suffer at first. But once we understand this system and once we finally have it, you know, properly dialed in, it could be an advantage. What we first thought was, you know, a detriment to our car and our design, it could be quite the advantage. Because it seemed like Button himself was surprised. He was very – I remember him saying before he even got to drive the car, he's like, this is like one of the best cars. He just had so much to say about it. Whether that was playing up in the media or trying to mess with his rivals or not, we won't know. But at the same time it was kind of depressing to see how we learned that, was it soft tired, they're doing their soft tire runs and stuff like that, and all of a sudden it just fell off. And a part of me wanted to believe that, you know, that was just McLaren being a McLaren, that, you know, the time come the race, we're going to see them, you know, perform reasonably well. But yeah, they were off the mark. I don't think this is, you know, this is sensationalism at its, you know, at its best. I think, yes, we're going to see McLaren suffer this year. They're probably not going to be in big contention. Yes, they risk, you know, they're probably going to be losing their sponsor, Vodafone. I don't know. Is that definite, Nick?
I believe it is now that it's been confirmed that they will lose the Vodafone sponsorship at the end of this season.
Yeah, and they're going to lose Patty Lowe. Hamilton's gone. I think this is a new era for McLaren, but it's a new challenge. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. This could be because obviously, yeah, they had a lot of good things going before. But when's the last time McLaren's won a constructors' championship or successfully done it? And they've had plenty of chances. I mean, yeah, okay, 2007, that was a little bit odd, but they've had chances to win this and secure it, and they've had the drivers that could probably do it well. It's always been a management issue, hasn't it?
There's a lot with McLaren that, I mean, I've been very vocal in the past about McLaren. I'm not a fan of them at all.
No.
I don't fully agree with the way they go about their management side of things, and also don't fully agree with the amount of sponsorship and requirements that they put on the drivers. And I think that's one of the main reasons Hamilton wants to leave as well. I think what we have to look at with McLaren is, yes, they are entering a new era, and when entering a new era, you have to, I think, believe in your philosophy to go forwards. There are so many football analogies I could use with that, but I won't bore everyone with it. But it is very true. You have to believe in the philosophy you have to progress and move forwards. And it has been well documented with the pull rod suspension system that they have, how much they actually got the time down to simply change or modify the pull rod suspension. I remember at the Jerez test, I think it was the first Barcelona test, sorry, they were up, it was something like 15, 20 minutes just simply changing the bars on the front of the front suspension to understand it with the pull rod suspension, because you have to get underneath the car. And I think they slashed that by nearly half, which is pretty impressive, really, to understand it. But they are clearly in a situation that I think Ferrari were in last year, but worse off. And the reason I say they are worse off is because they don't have a driver like Fernando Alonso. You know, people will slate me for this, and I know what this is going to happen, but I have never been, even though I'm British, I have never been a Jenson Button fan, and I never will be. I don't like him as a person. I don't rate his driving either. I think he's a very snide character.
What?
I think he's a very snide character, and I do not like him.
Even
Sergio Perez, I think we're actually going to see his flaws rather than his true ability this season. I think what you saw with the Sauber last year was the Sauber very good on tyres, not Sergio Perez. And I think he is already shown from one race, in fact, one qualifying session, that he clearly not got his head screwed on, was trying to be... he clearly was trying to gamble and try and gamble big straight away. He wanted to throw a six straight away and get it right with the tyre call. That was never going to happen. And it was shown by the fact that his teammate drove back into pit lane and went straight back out on intermediates. It's basic logic. All right, it was never going to happen. Sector 3 was far, far too wet. And he tried to gamble. And quite honestly, I think Perez is a weak choice. I don't think they've got a very good pairing. And considering McLaren regard themselves as a top team, I actually think they've got one of the weakest pairings in Formula 1.
Oh, that's harsh. I mean, whew, I think in some ways you might make a good case. Now, I don't disagree. Like, okay, and maybe it weighs on, you know, we don't know how much it came down to his decision or McLaren at that time. Of course, the media loves to focus on him, loves, and they get lots of pressure. And I think it's, yeah, through their management. I mean, it's unnecessary pressure. Why are you pressuring yourself this much? Why are you having these requirements? You think it's great, you know, maybe corporate structure, but this is racing. This is a whole other thing. And just because it's a bit more hardcore and stuff doesn't mean, and in a competitive environment, doesn't mean you're exactly going to be successful. There's different ways to do things. And I think that I'll leave it at that on that, because I've never agreed with their management structures. Yeah, people, you know, have this big appreciation for Ron Dennis and how he is and stuff. Yes, okay, I can, and, you know, what's been built in McLaren, but. You know, I don't think that's always the best way to go through it, and I don't think I can ever be convinced otherwise unless I just have really good – well, if I was – I would be convinced if they would win these championships or if they would have drivers that were happy and they wouldn't have so much spoke out against them or so much controversy around them. And that's falling back on Perez. I don't know how much it came down to the driver, just how much it came down to a decision made behind the pit wall. You know, I guess at that time they had to. They had to make a gamble. And in that case, I got to disagree. I mean, yeah, maybe he knew, you know, he's this number two driver. He's going to be put in that position where they're going to try to get him. They're going to try to do some things. I mean, same thing happens to Felipe Massa. You know, you're freaking, in a lot of ways, you're a test rep. You're a lab rat at times. And they're going to see, are you going to work?
I want to just interrupt you on that point. If you are a lab rat like that, like, as you said, with someone like Sergio Perez, why on earth would you not go for someone like Nico Hülkenberg then? Why would you not go and pick someone like Nico Hülkenberg? He is an absolutely first-rate quality driver. I have watched his career. I mean, I saw him back in A1GP many years ago.
He might have made that work in the wet. That guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You look at the results, you look at the driver, you look at the ability, and you take the best from what the situation in front of you. Now, Hülkenberg was running with Hamilton, in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Why? I can't for the life of me think why on earth you would not snap up Nico Hülkenberg. Any big team yet? Okay, Ferrari and Red Bull, I can understand it simply because of the fact of where they're at the moment with their drivers. But surely, McLaren, in that situation, you take Nico Hülkenberg. Of all the midfield drivers you take, he is at the number one, and you would take Hülkenberg. And I guarantee Hülkenberg would wipe the floor with Button as well.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think he learned a lot from his experience at Williams and with Rubens Barrichello and stuff. And that would be interesting to see how that would play out. But, you know, unfortunately, it's not like that. And I agree with you. Yeah, they should have had Nico Hülkenberg in there. A lot of people said that, and it's unfortunate that it's not down to this performance. You know, I think they should invest in a guy that they can throw him out there like that and see what he's made of and, you know, give them some data. But at the same time, we all know that it's all about securing certain resources and stuff. McLaren, I think they know in a lot of ways have messed up, that they're going to need something, some sort of backing and they're hoping they're going to get some sort of backing with having Sergio out there rather than Nico. And I guess Nico doesn't come from enough money at the moment. Yeah. And
on the financial front, yeah, okay, I agree with that.
He's going to have to do some, you know, he's going to have to secure something. He's going to have to make some things happen. And this is going to be crucial, you know, crucial years for him ahead. And it's sad because a lot of times we always wonder all this, you know, potential that could have been in this driver, yet, you know, they exit way too early, or, you know, how much they've improved over time. Like, yeah, I thought, you know, yeah, okay, the guy messed up for a long time before, but I think it was, you know, it was sad to see what happened with. We can say what happened with many drivers that have had to take an exit out, you know. I know you're talking more about, you know, we see Max Chilton come in, or we see people move in. And what was the, you know, there's a guy there for not even too long. He was testing and he was already out. And
Lewis Ratzia.
Oh, yeah. And I thought that was just kind of funny. And we're having this whole thing go around. And then all of a sudden we have the, you know, our favorite stabbing German coming in. Okay, that was a little bit mean. And, yeah, but, you know, at the same time, you're going to stab a dude in the neck in public like that, you know, or try to...
Oh, Adrian Souto.
Oh, yeah, Souto. Okay, our favorite stabbing German. I don't know if there's any other ones out there. I guess they're all stabbers. I'm just kidding. I love you guys. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you see all this shake around and stuff. I can only feel sorry for... That was a kind of a funny thing in and of itself. But, yeah, it's been sad to see talent... have to leave in some cases, and Martin Brundle was kind of brutal. He's like, look, they've only got a little bit of time to prove themselves and stuff like that. I'm like, well, you know what, I think in terms of performance they have proven themselves, but let's be honest, the real reason they're out is because, you know, in a lot of cases and you know, they didn't have enough money, or there's a bit of politics in Formula One, and that's just how it goes, and that's just how racing is. And yeah, it's not just down to driving. You've got to manage all these other things as well. But yeah, that was a weird move by I agree, weird thing by McLaren. It was a bit strange to see that. But I have to disagree with you on Button. I think Button can be a good leader. Button, you know, Button's been in this situation before with Honda. He can keep a positive attitude, whereas Rubens Barrichello was like a big baby about it, man. Just throwing shit everywhere. You know, I couldn't stand seeing that guy when he was at – you know, in Honda's, you know, dire years, you know, right before they left the sport. It was sad. You know, it counts just as much, you know, you got to be a sore winner, or you can't be a sore loser, and you can't be a sore winner. You got to carry yourself with some sort of, you know, respect and, you know, lay on some principles. And Button, you know, that's what a year in 2007 and 2008, you know, nobody, like, yeah, it was terrible, but people respected something about him, and that's that he kept his head down and he kept trying. And in some ways, he made a little bit of improvement. In some ways, you know, he didn't. And then he finally got to prove himself. And I think he's done a good job at getting the team centered around him. I mean, everybody thought that Lewis Hamilton was going to dash him, and that was not the case. And he's got flaws, yes. I don't think, but he's also got incredible strengths that a lot of times can balance it off. But I just think the gap between his flaws and his strengths are a little bit too wide, and that's why we haven't seen so much consistency. If he can just get consistency when it comes to qualifying, when it comes to delivering, and I think he'll be able to do it. But unfortunately, I don't think this year will be his campaign. You know, the year that he could have proved himself once Lewis Hamilton left. So,
I said at the start. Unfortunately, we never got ourselves a pre-season show just to
the
way it happened. Yeah, we apologize for that. We wanted to, but it just didn't happen. I said, actually, it was on Facebook. I put this comment up at the time, and this was well prior to the situation with the actual McLaren itself, with its lack of pace overall. I actually said, I do not think McLaren will win a race in 2013. And now the fact that the car's bad as well, it probably just emphasizes that point. But even if they had a good car, I still don't think that McLaren would win a race in 2013. I don't think those two drivers could do it, especially with the capabilities of the drivers around them and the drivers that have the potential around them. I do not believe that they can do it. Last year, in all fairness and in all counts purposes, the McLaren was actually the quickest car. If you look at the times, if you look at testing, etc., and look at what happened, the McLaren was the quickest car.
Right.
they had numerous problems in pit lane until they got that sorted out and then had one of the quickest times. Mm-hmm. They had no end of breakdowns and technical issues, and it cost Hamilton any sort of real shot at the title. And I say Hamilton because I don't think Button was able to match up to what Hamilton was doing at the time. And considering tyre preservation was one of the key thing with the Pirellis, I thought Hamilton was doing a better job. And I'm not a big Hamilton fan either, by the way. I'm not trying to like big up Hamilton here at all. I'm not his biggest fan either. But he did a much, much better job personally than I think anything that what Button's done, other than maybe Spa. I think Spa was one of those unique days, and Button just seemed to find the pace of, I don't know, he was just on it.
I don't think there's enough of those.
Like you said, with consistency, I don't think he has enough of those days that he's consistent enough that you can have a Spa at every single race.
I've never been convinced by Lewis Hamilton. I do not get why people... Okay, yes, he's a great driver. I think he is, yeah, and I think he's got a lot of raw speed and raw pace. But Martin Brundle, I mean, why are you up so up his... You know, how many of you have your head so far shoved up his butt? You know, okay, yeah, Martin Brundle, I have a lot of respect for that guy as well and his opinions, but seriously, Hamilton has never really impressed me. Okay, he has impressed me at least with, I thought, you know, Mercedes' biggest problem would be Lewis Hamilton losing his cool, blaming his team. That's something you never do as a driver. You don't blame other people for mistakes that, you know, everybody made. You don't sit there and lash out at your team members. You don't act like a child. You don't lose it. And it was terrible to see the past few years him just, like, lose his cool on a lot of things. And I think he caused a lot of his own problems. You know, there's an old saying that you create that which is before you, and I think that, you know, that's the truth of you know, even more so the truth of Lewis Hamilton. You know, he didn't get, you know, they didn't win last year with McLaren. They didn't get all these things, but a lot of times, you know, if the guy could just pull together a good team, if he could be a proper leader, and for some people saying he's going to be the leader at Mercedes, bullshit. No, he's not. I don't think he's got leadership potential. I think he's, you know, he's a good driver. He can make things happen, but he makes a lot of mistakes. His cool's not there. He's got a lot to prove. I think the person who would have that leadership potential, is Rosberg. And so, McLaren losing Hamilton, I think they relied too much on him, or they allowed him to have a little bit too much influence on them. And I think it was a negative, in a lot of ways, in some ways, I think it was a negative relationship. Whether that was down to McLaren, because, okay, I got to admit, people, I was surprised by how happy this dude was. He seemed a little bit older. He seemed like he learned from things. Maybe behind the scenes, McLaren's, you know, management yet again fails, and they're just a bunch of assholes. But I also see, at the same time, Jensen Button being a very happy and honest guy. So, and he was able to get that team with him, you know, not only a couple of years ago, and he was able to, you know, take down Hamilton. And so it makes me think, what did that come down to? And I guess we'll see this year. But McLaren, what's your verdict, Nick? Do you think that they should go ahead and start developing a 2013 car? Do you think they should take the time to understand this suspension more? Do you think they've made that bad of a move?
Well, I think it's very interesting, your point, what you're just saying there in the questions you've asked, because, I mean, just today it's been, you know, we're on Monday here, so it's been said that McLaren were considering even going back to last year's car. Now they've completely quashed that rumor straight away and said no, we know we're not going to go back to last year's car. But for that even to be thrown out or put into the stratosphere, if you like, then McLaren must have made some sort of fundamental mistake here. Now Ferrari simply knew what they'd done wrong and tried to correct it. McLaren are basically saying, no, we've completely messed this up and we're going to have to go back to potentially last year's car. Now, I don't really see that myself. I don't think they will do that. And I think they will try and understand this suspension. But I think it will take too long. And by the time they maybe have learnt it, I think they're going to be miles off pace, miles away in terms of the constructors' points. And it could potentially be McLaren's lowest point scoring finish in a season, where they actually lose their title sponsor as well. So financially, more than anything, McLaren really could suffer this year.
I guess, which is why they need a good old Checo.
Perez.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, we've seen this happen with Honda. I remember Honda after the 2006 season were on an all-time high, and people thought, well, that car is actually quite fast. You know, going in 2007, it should be quite amazing. And it was a disappointment. They changed their philosophy. They took risk. And the thing is, you take risk, sometimes you get a big win, and sometimes, you know, and let's be honest, I think McLaren needed to take a risk. They had so many changes taking place, they needed to take a risk. Now they got to accept the responsibility for that risk. And, yeah, maybe people are being too hard on them and stuff like that, but I think they'll figure this out. Honda, you know, we see what happens when they sort of gone forward with that sort of philosophy of keeping going out there, keeping those ideas a bit more open. And it took them, they had to go, you know, you had a Super Aguri car just whooping up on them, you know, their previous car the previous year. And the only reason why I bring that up is because they, in order for them to be successful again, of course, they needed a technical regulations, a big major change to come up, which will be seen in, you know, it's coming in 2014. They just had to go back to the basics, and they had to learn exactly where they went wrong in that regard. And of course, that team, they took advantage of a very unique situation, which I don't think would have happened if it was just not as big technical relations. I don't think we would have seen like Braun as successful as it was that year. And obviously that team, you know, team that moved on to Mercedes and stuff, they've suffered. So I think what McLaren needs to do now more than anything is to maybe stick with this risk that they've made, but at the same time, start preparing for next year. But at the same, you know, I think they already are in a way. They, you know, they're going to have an engine change, and from what people say, they're going to go to Honda. There's going to be a lot of things that need to get out there. Ferrari's already been making this move and getting some of their older designers out there from their next year's car to oversee as like operational support. But I think this is what McLaren needs to do. And honestly, driver-wise, I have to agree, they're pretty weak. I don't think it's weak in terms of the driver's potential or their talent, but they could have done better with that lineup. This is going to be a trying time for Jenson Button. I think this will be, we always say, the proving ground. I mean, the man's already proved himself. He's won a championship, but I'm sure he's going to want more. But I think if he does it right and he takes proper command of this team, then we can see better changes for McLaren down the road and a bit more respect. But it's going to take the same sort of tenacity in Jenson Button that we saw in 2007, 2008, where he did not let that pressure get to him. He didn't throw hissy fits. He just went on with it, and he did his best. And sometimes that's all you can do in those type of situations. And, yeah, so well, I guess we'll have to cringe and look the other way when we see them at Malaysia, which is coming up this weekend. I can't already believe, you know, we waited so long for this season. Now we got Malaysia coming up. I love it. I love the starting points of this year because, really, this is the best time to be scoring points because everybody's trying to figure out tires. Everybody's trying to figure out the design of their cars. You know, you have technical breakdowns. This is the time, especially if you're on the lower end teams, to get your points in now because it's going to be even harder later, especially if you're a team like Williams that, you know, messes up their development halfway through the year and don't stay strong the entire year. And I think this is where Lotus especially needs to be scoring the most points because I don't think they have I think they've got the right crew. They got the right, but at the same time, resource-wise, you know, we've got to wonder if they've got the same sort of will that Ferrari is going to need because Ferrari's desperate to get that championship win. So I think this is a time now where Lotus really need to get their wins together. I think that we're going to see another strong Kimi Raikkonen and maybe, hopefully, Romain Grosjean going in there as well. And I don't know. I'm trying to decide on a dark horse. I think we're going to see, you know, Fernando Alonso. He's been strong at this track. We know he's going to be strong. Is there any surprises that you think that is we're going to see in Malaysia? We're going to see a definite improvement.
Well, I think obviously we're nearly 50 minutes into this podcast. And we only really originally scheduled half an hour.
We're going
to
get better.
We wanted to preview a little bit also. Obviously, Malaysia. And obviously, Malaysia is back to a standard Formula One track, if you like. It's back on asphalt fully, and it's back on a regular racing circuit. But we've seen from the past few years, especially last year, how much the weather affects Malaysia. And from what I've seen currently, the Friday and the Saturday are due to be very hot and very sunny. But the Sunday come race day, it is meant to rain. And we saw how much the rain affected it last year. So I think what we may see again is a strategy call happening. With the drivers that are currently there and the teams, the way they're positioned, I think it looks quite strong for the qualifying session for Red Bull still. I think they've got a tremendous one-lap speed in that car. And I also think Mercedes also have good one-lap speed. And I think they may challenge Red Bull in the warmer conditions because they clearly seem to thrive in those conditions as well. So I think the Mercedes may be up there in terms of qualifying. And then come to the race day, I think we may see a very strong Ferrari. I think the pull rod suspension seems to work quite well in wet conditions, which may favour McLaren potentially, but I think we'll favour the Ferrari the most. So I think we'll see a very strong Ferrari. I think we'll also see a very strong Mercedes. Mercedes seem to run very, very well in the wet conditions throughout Australia, so I think Mercedes will be thereabouts. The anomaly and the odd one out currently for me is Red Bull. I really don't know where to put. Like I just said, with qualifying, no issue. I think they're okay. Come race pace, I really don't know where they're at. The warm conditions, the cooler conditions, the wet. It's hard to get a gauge quite where they are at, whether they are struggling with the car or if they just were particularly struggling with those conditions. So for me, Red Bull will be the most interesting one to see. And I think also the Lotus has a lot of promise with it. And where we saw last year with the Sauber being very kind and soft on its tyres, I think it's the turn of the Lotus this year to be that. And I think what Lotus may not have in raw overall speed, they make up for it in strategy calls, where they may be able to have a two-stop over a three-stop, which allows, you know, as we saw Kimi Raikkonen to bring himself into play. One of the things was documented on Sky Sports and Ted Kravitz's notebook was the fact that Romain Grosjean was given the same upgrades as Kimi Raikkonen on the Saturday morning and only got two dry laps worth of running with the upgrades on. So he's not actually able to set the car up for what he wants to do with the new upgrades that have just been shipped in ready for his car. So with the upgrades both added to the car now and both getting an equal time to explore them for Malaysia, I think we may see a stronger performance from Romain Grosjean. So I've actually got two dark horses. One is Romain Grosjean and the other is Felipe Massa.
Oh, Felipe. It's so good to see him back. Even though when he was at his most successful, I could not care any less. Oh, it's funny how things work out. But I have to respect somebody who sticks with what they're doing and truly believes in themselves and, against all odds, can come back and, you know, make things happen. Oh, God, but he's got quite a mountain to climb. I think I have to agree with you. I don't know if Felipe will do as well this time. But I think the people to watch out for will be Romain. And if it rains, let's check out the good old Finn Botas from Williams. I think he can, from what I hear, he's got it in there. And I think Nico Hülkenberg will be another one to watch. I'm really interested in seeing what that Sauber can do. You know, they put in a lot of laps and a lot of miles. You know, they've got a real smart way of developing this car. I think we'll see some good performances from them as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see who emerges out of that midfield yet again. That was quite a surprise, but what we saw from Sutil in Australia. But yeah, so I'm going to go. I'll go with Nico Hülkenberg. It will be one to watch. And Sutil has always been great in the wet. So maybe him, but I think, yeah, Hülkenberg and Bottas. Yeah, we'll go there. But I'm not really convinced by the Williams, but hey. When it's raining, you might want to get some Malaysian style rain because that's the type of rain that's gonna, you know, make everything go crazy. So
that's very, very true.
Yeah.
And as we are coming, well, we're 55 minutes in now, so I think what we will do is wrap up our first podcast
for
the Racing Edge. It's been very fun to do this first one, I must admit, and I think we covered a good few topics there. And obviously, the main thing, as Brandon pointed out before, is the interaction. We want to hear from you guys. We want your comments. We want your posts, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be on our website, or whether it be on any other the sources that we post out. So we want to hear from you guys. We want to know what you think of the podcast, what you think of us, what you think of the topics. If you want us to talk about anything in particular, please do get involved. Anything you throw at us, we will take it on board and do our best to either answer it or certainly change it for the next show, I guess.
Yeah, and to add to that, and remember, if you want to be on this show, if you think that you've got some good knowledge or particular interest in a topic that you could argue an interesting point from, then go ahead and contact us. We may put you in the next show. What we plan to do with each show is we want to tackle one or two topics within a racing category. For instance, the next podcast, we're going to be going over sports cars, and we're going to particularly talk about sports cars in the U.S. and where they're going and what it needs to go. So if you feel like you could have a point of view that could help, then by all means, get a hold of us. We'll get you on the show. And we'll, as long as you're a respectable person and can argue your point, we'll have a nice little roundtable discussion. As before, we've been a bit longer this time. This was more like two podcasts in one. What we hope to do is 20 to 25 minute podcasts. We know it can be very exhausting to listen to a bunch of talking going on, but at the same time, we wanted to sort of cover our bases here. As Nick said, look for the different sources. We're going to be distributing this podcast over multiple sources, and we're going to be adding more production value to our podcast over time. This is a learning process for us as well, so get involved. And I think we had something that actually we were talking about earlier, that when we were talking about with McLaren's management issues, we wanted to ask you, the viewer, what would you do if you're in McLaren's position? What would you do at this point in time? What changes would you make? And we want you to post this on theracingedge.wordpress.com. And we're going to make a shout out in the next podcast, the person who comes up with the most interesting or, probably the most sensible response. So if you're interested, just come on to our website and put that down as a comment on whenever we post up this podcast. So thank you for listening, and look forward to doing this more of this in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Brian said, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you for the next one.